This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here this afternoon. We talk about a lot of diverse subjects on that on this program, and this week has certainly been an example of that, from economic development to national music performers to today. We talk about Bigfoot and Sasquatch, and Dr. Jeff Meldrum, a professor of anatomy and anthropology at Idaho State University, is going to be speaking tonight at the fairgrounds, part of the Sasquatch Festival happening tomorrow in Glide. Dr. Meldrum, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
I will tell you that in many years of radio, this is my first interview ever about Sasquatch and Bigfoot.
Well, I can't say the same for myself.
In fact, it's probably been the topic for all of your, you know, radio media interviews.
Pretty much, yeah. That's what gets the public attention, interest.
So how did you first get interested in the subject of Sasquatch and Bigfoot?
Well, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and I happened to be living in Spokane when Roger Patterson came through with his now famous 60 seconds of film of a Bigfoot taken in Northern California. That set the ball in motion. Eventually I ended up in a career path that really poised me to, as that interest was rekindled, approach it from a very informed and professional perspective. That is my expertise, my research area is the evolution of human bipedalism, how we have come to be adapted to walking on two legs. So the prospect of another species that shares that interesting adaptation, that quite unique in many ways, unusually rare adaptation, is a great natural experiment in comparison and contrast to our own condition.
Now, if I read this correctly, you've been at Idaho State for about 30 years.
Almost, yep, that's right. Yeah.
And do you think seeing what you saw in Spokane, did that kind of lead you into this career path, or did you were you already interested in some of these subjects?
It was probably a little of both. I mean, I was, as a youngster, was always fascinated with natural history and insect collections, bringing home stray animals and terrariums and aquaria and so forth. And all of that kind of gelled. But I must say, you know, when I entered my professional career, that interest in Sasquatch was actually quite latent. And it wasn't until a string of circumstances kind of put this right up under my nose once again that I was presented with an opportunity to examine a long line of very, very fresh tracks in southeastern Washington outside of Walla Walla. That really bowled me over. The evidence was extremely compelling, and that's what's drawn me in, and where my attention has really focused, the area of my expertise. It's not like this is an avocational preoccupation that I pursue on a lark. I mean, this is the meat and potatoes of what I do for a living in studying the evolutionary history and also the experimental basis and understanding our adaptations for walking on two legs, how that came about, and so forth. So it you know, I have over 300 footprint casts in my laboratory, and that constitutes a very compelling body of data from which has emerged some really interesting insights into the distinguishing characteristics of the Sasquatch foot.
Now, I've always lived in Oregon. We won't talk about how many years that is because I don't want to use that number on the radio. But, you know, I've always heard about Sasquatch or Bigfoot along the way. You obviously are approaching the whole topic very scientifically. There have been times along the way where I have observed things that seem more like off the path, sort of hobbyists, mm-hmm. You know, people, and you hear stories and you wonder, how could that possibly be true? But I mean, 300 footprint casts.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, science obviously is very conservative, and that serves it well up to a point. You don't want to cut your nose off to spite your face because of your conservatism, and you need to be able to look outside the box now and again. As a result, I'm kind of the lone voice in the wilderness sometimes. Some of my colleagues have passed, and I'm looking for that upcoming generation of curious scholars to pick up the baton, as it were. But it's challenging. Whenever you're dealing with a subject that is considered on the fringe, that is controversial, that seems to go against the grain, which back in the 60s and 70s it did. But now things have changed in anthropology and in our understanding of the pattern and process, the fossil record of human evolution, you know, in the adaptations, unusual combinations of traits as our modern human anatomy emerged. Now, what you see depicted on that film made in 1967 is spot on to what we conceive of early bipedal hominins to have looked like and behaved like. And so it's really quite intriguing to see how that has changed. But the influence of the past, you know, as they've often said, sometimes a new idea, a new paradigm, it requires an entire generation to pass before that new idea can gain a hold. And that's what we're witnessing right now. We're seeing that transition in mindset, in perspective from the scientific community.
Now, is Sasquatch and Bigfoot, are those essentially synonyms?
They are. They're basically regional and temporal variants. So Bigfoot was kind of coined by a newspaper editor down in Northern California in 1958 when he looked at these gigantic plaster casts and said, man, that's a Bigfoot. Sasquatch was coined by a teacher and writer up in British Columbia who drew upon the native terms for the wild man of the woods and anglicized a term that was a little easier to roll off the English-speaking tongue, and that's where Sasquatch emerged.
Now, is this a Northwest U.S., Southern Canada phenomenon, or does it broader?
It's actually broader. It's kind of interesting. And one of the things I'll be talking about tonight is some of that ecological context, the basis for a biological species. And there seems to be a very good correlation between the habitat requirements, the bioclimatic factors that determine the habitat of black bear and Sasquatch. And there's a remarkable congruence. I mean, the skeptics would look at that and say, oh, well, there's your answer. These are just black bear misidentifications. I think that's stretching the point beyond. But the rule of thumb is if a black bear can make a living in a certain region of the continent, then there's a chance that the Sasquatch could as well.
Now, you put out a book, Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science, in 2006, and have you put out other books, too?
I have, and some field guides. I'm working on a follow-up. The producer of the documentary, Sasquatch, Legend Meets Science, that was the inspiration for the title of that first book, is now working on a follow-up. You know, what's happened in the past 25 years, and so I'm working on a sequel now to that, as well as several other writing projects.
One of the things I read in the information I got from the organizers of the Sasquatch Festival is in your book, you talk about what you believe is scientific evidence for the reality of this, but also affording deference to tribal people's traditional knowledge of the subject. How important is that?
Well, I think it really provides some grounding. I mean, oftentimes the skeptics like to say this notion was invented in 1958, basically, when someone donned some ridiculous carved wooden feet nailed to their logging boots and tromped out some tracks along the dirt roads. That's really an insult to the very deep-rooted traditional knowledge that the indigenous people of this continent have of this creature, this animal.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. Dr. Jeff Meldrum with us. He is speaking tonight at the Douglas County Fairgrounds. Tickets are still available for that. If you go to the Glide Sasquatch Festival website, you can link in there and get signed up. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1245 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 12:47. Lars Larson coming up at 1. I'll have Umpqua Valley Live at 4, looking at arts, entertainment, community activities. And joining us live from California will be the lead singer of the Heartless Bastards that are going to be in concert Tuesday night. We'll also talk about some upcoming arts events happening in the Umpqua Valley. On Mondays, Inside Douglas County, former Republican candidate for governor and former House Minority Leader Christine Drazen will talk about a new organization that she has formed. Dr. Jeff Meldrum in here now, a professor of anatomy and anthropology at Idaho State University over in southeast Idaho. Pocatello, right?
That's correct.
And how did you, now it looks to me like that's probably where you spent the bulk of your academic career.
It is. Before that, I took a bachelor's and master's from BYU, you know, hailing here from the Intermountain West. I did a doctorate at SUNY Stony Brook on Long Island, so I got a taste of the East Coast, and then dipped down to the South and did a postdoc for several years at Duke University. My first academic posting was at Northwestern Medical Center. Thought that was all the further west I was going to get, but when the opportunity came to return back to the mountains, I jumped at it.
So how far back does this go? You mentioned some of the tribal comments about that. How many generations back are we talking?
Well, their oral traditions go back, you know, into the mists of time, time immemorial, as they would say. They assert that they have been here all along. And so they, this creature, this very anthropomorphic creature, has played a very significant role in their storytelling and in their belief systems as long as they've been here.
And a lot of people look at it very skeptically. Mm-hmm. Do you ever see or are aware of situations where essentially people go out and pretend to be Bigfoot?
Oh, sure. There are circumstances where that happens. And not too long ago, there was someone who was attempting to prank motorists up in northern Idaho by running across a highway at night in a Bigfoot costume. And unfortunately, he was run over as a result and lost his life in the process. Intentional hoaxes are actually few and far between. What I deal with much more on a daily basis, literally daily, weekly basis, is sifting through the unintentional misidentifications, you know, over active imagination or over interpretation, or as we were alluding to earlier, there are instances where people do see bears and maybe misidentify that as a Sasquatch. The flip side works as well, though, too. I've had a phone call from a hunter who called me up, and he was quite agitated. He said, I saw this thing. He said, but it had to be a bear, but it stood up and walked on two legs. I've never seen a bear do that before. And it didn't have a snout or ears on top of its head like a bear. But it had to be a bear. He was trying to get me to convince him that he had actually seen a bear, although what he saw just did not fit the mold of his frame of reference for a black bear.
I would presume, though science is definitely my weak suit, are Sasquatch, do people look at that as a male, female, or both?
Well, and this is an important point. We're not talking about a lone entity, a single monster. We're talking about a biological species. And so both gender and even different ages have been seen. Footprints have been found of varying lengths. Even down to the smallest I have in the collection is about 3 inches in length, which is probably the earliest that they're ambulatory. You know, an infant's walking on its own right alongside the tracks, the 14-inch tracks of the mother. It's quite fascinating to see that behavior in the field.
I understand that Douglas County, given the large geographic area we have and the whole North Umpqua area in particular, is noted for a lot of bleep sightings.
I'm sure there are. I just honestly can't keep tabs anymore on individual reports that accumulate. I tend to prioritize my time on those accounts that are corroborated with footprints or hair or scat, some trace or physical evidence to substantiate the visual encounter.
I was looking through some of the information the organizers provided, and your name and appearances you've made pop up with a lot of folks in science, Jane Goodall, for instance, people that are highly touted, very well known. It sounds like you're kind of the top of the league when it comes to this whole area.
Well, I've taken a very open and very proactive position, I guess you could say, but I'm although sometimes I, as I mentioned earlier, I feel like that lone voice in the wilderness, I interact with a lot of colleagues behind the scenes. Some are more forthcoming with their endorsement, their support and encouragement, such as you mentioned Dr. Jane Goodall, and the foreword to my book was written by Dr. George Schaller, a preeminent naturalist who may not quite have the name recognition into the general public, but in scientific circles, it's extremely well known. And his enthusiasm and interest for the topic, for the rationale, the justification of pursuing the scientific question, really carries a lot of weight. And there are a lot of academics, young and old. I'm gratified when I meet a newly fledged doctorate who pulls out a copy of my book and asks for an autograph, because that suggests that there is this upcoming generation that will take this question seriously and pursue the evidence regardless of what preconceptions that may have been, you know, they may have been indoctrinated with or attempted to be indoctrinated with based on old ideas about the pattern and process of human evolution.
Do you feel like sometimes people's preconceptions stop science from advancing?
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's no question. Thomas Kuhn wrote an excellent book on scientific revolutions. I mean, this was a very seminal, influential book in the history and philosophy of science that pointed that very thing out, that we get that the scientific community kind of gets in a rut and that throws up these guardrails that, whether justified or not, that tend to restrict the lines of inquiry that can be pursued. And so, you know, a lot of academics, you write grant proposals for something you really already know the answer to, but it's very conservative, you're more likely to get funded. So,
when people come out tonight, what kinds of things are you going to cover?
Well, they asked me to approach the sort of the ecological context. What are the adaptations of Sasquatch? You know, it's been proposed that by one onlooker several decades ago that the notion of Sasquatch it presents a creature that is just totally unsuitable to the environment in which it reportedly resides. And I'm going to argue just the opposite, that in fact we'll look at various hints and clues from these encounters, from these observations, and show that there's a remarkable case to be made that this is a biological species that is very appropriately adapted to its environment, as a large-bodied primate adapted to the temperate mountainous forests of North America.
Now, tickets are still available for the event tonight, 6 o'clock at the Douglas County Fairgrounds. The Glide Sasquatch website has a link to those. And you're going to be out at the festival tomorrow, too.
Oh, yes. I'll be here all day tomorrow as well.
And will you just be manning a booth? Or are you speaking, or what are you doing?
Yeah. Well, there's going to be a short Q&A period tomorrow, but for the most part, I'll be at my table, and so people can come by and get a copy of the book, get an autograph, ask questions, have a conversation. Look forward to it.
Dr. Jeff Meldrum, Professor of Anatomy and Anthropology at Idaho State University, here for the Sasquatch Festival. Doctor, thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.